So you might be sitting there thinking, what is so interesting about chickens? Well, guess what, friends? It's not about chickens. This is a show where we can talk about how the municipalities operate and make decisions. Just like with parenting, any government has the ability to overpower its citizens. No one can dispute the power of the sword, especially when the government is bigger and stronger than the individual. But does that make it right? Our own city provided us with several examples recently of how a governing body can suddenly shift from being friendly to being hostile toward freedom. Our liberties are always vulnerable, but so much more vulnerable when we have a governing body that has fallen into the groupthink syndrome. So on this show today, you will hear a lot about the chicken ordinance, but please listen to the real issue. It is our ability to govern ourselves and how bigger government ideology insults the intelligence of the citizens.
I'm an American! Red, white, and blue! And I'm a citizen of this world and of heaven!
Welcome to Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, your host, and I'm here to help. From parenting to public policies to political advice, join me in taking America back one family at a time. As a speaker, writer, former legislator, mother of seven, and wife of one for over 30 years, I bring you my experience.
Don't lose your freedom.
And now it's time for Homefront.
Don't lose your freedom.
Welcome to Homefront. Today we have two exceptional guests who are experts on chickens. We have Patrick Stovall and Catherine Davis. Patrick is originally from North Carolina and now a resident of O'Fallon, and he is trying to organize a petition drive to create a way for people to legally own chickens. So welcome, Patrick.
Thanks, Cynthia. Thanks for having me.
Good. And we also have with us tonight Catherine. She is an agronomist who comes to us from Kansas State University, where she is getting a master's degree in agriculture. Catherine's love of chickens began when a city official first told her that she could have chickens, and then ended up 2 years later with a different city official telling her to get rid of them. So welcome, Catherine.
Good to be with you tonight.
It is a pleasure to have both of you on the show today. Patrick, I want you to start by telling us your story and how you came to the place today where you are expending your time and energy trying to get this petition together.
Sure. I kind of grew up around food and good food, and I grew up around farming and people who weren't afraid to do for themselves and create their own food, and that's just kind of my background, and it's very important to me. Plus, I had three older brothers, and the safest place was next to my grandmother and my mother for the longest time. So I spent a lot of time in the kitchen watching them cook, and just kind of gathered an appreciation of food. The two really just kind of go hand in hand for me, raising animals and good, healthy eating. And so, after I was in the military, I was in the U.S. Navy, and then when I got out of the Navy, I went to culinary school, and I graduated culinary school, so I just loved to cook, and then I started learning more about the food that we're eating. And what the USDA states and the FDA states are okay for us to eat versus what my personal opinion of what we're okay to eat. And they really kind of oppose. I was kind of shocked to find out that, you know, the USDA stipulates that for a human being to consume an egg, it has to be washed in chlorine first. And, you know, as we all know, chlorine's a known carcinogen, and eggs are porous. And it just kind of staggered the imagination. I was just like, well, wait a minute, you know, and I was really shocked. And so I just started learning more and more about food and was kind of, like I said, just appalled at what is socially acceptable. You know, the USDA stipulates that a certain amount of rat feces is okay in your food. You know, now I don't know about you or the rest of the people listening or, you know, America, but I'm on a zero rat feces diet. You know, I just I'm not okay with any percentage of it in my food. So I started looking into cleaner sources of food, which just naturally led to, you know, progressive and sustainable agriculture. And you know, part of that is, of course, the huge part of what I'm working on now is chickens. And, you know, not living out in the country, you know, and living inside the city of O'Fallon, you know, I'm limited, of course, to my lot size and what I can produce. But I was amazed when I moved to O'Fallon and I went to get chickens. And my wife said, well, you know, Patrick, you should really look into the laws first before you get them. And I'm like, you know, my wife's name's Jamie. And I said, Jamie, I said, you're out of your mind. I said, this town, you know, it's tiny compared to places that I've lived in the past. I mean, I've lived in San Diego, and I've been in Chicago and Baltimore and Washington, D.C. So I thought, of course, you know, it's going to be legal here. But I checked in, and yeah, it just kind of blew my mind. It is completely illegal to have poultry within the city limits of O'Fallon. You can have them in agricultural zones, of course, but you cannot have them in the city. So that led me to go to City Hall. I started going to the workshops and started going to the city, the city council meetings. I got up and spoke for the first time, I think, back in July of this year. And they all seemed fairly, you know, open to the idea at first. It was a lot of, great, glad you're here. This is, you know, we think it's a great idea. You know, we need to learn more about it, so on and so forth. And it actually went on for quite some time until they actually went through the whole process of even drafting an ordinance, and it went to the first reading, and at the first reading, it was voted on to move forward with it with a 9-1 yes to no vote. Only one person was against it. That was Rose Mack. And, you know, Ms. Mack said she was against it from day one. So, you know, I at least can say that she's been consistent throughout this thing. There's something to be said about consistency. And so I'll give her that. You know, she said she was going to vote no from day one, and she did. But, I thought, heck, you know, these guys just voted 9-1 to move on with this. And I told them, well, you know, my schedule changed, and I just couldn't make it to any more city council meetings. And it only had the second reading to go through. And lo and behold, 2 weeks later, when they had the meeting for the second reading, they voted it down 7-2. You know, it just kind of took the wind out of my sails. I really didn't see that coming. You know, I had everybody on the council assuring me they were going to vote yes for it, for the most part, anyway. And, how do you go from a 9-1 yes to no vote to a 7-2 no to yes vote in 2 weeks? I went looking for answers for that, and I just wasn't happy with what I got, which wasn't much. I contacted several people in the city council, and nobody returned my calls except for Councilman Dave Hinman. And, Mr. Hinman, he's a nice man, and he assured me that he wanted to vote yes for it, but he just couldn't because all his constituents that he spoke with said they did not want chickens in their backyard. He didn't hear from a single person other than myself that said they wanted chickens. Now, you know, mind you, Cynthia, that at one point in time during this whole discussion of backyard poultry in O'Fallon, the city council put a survey out on their website. On the city's website for backyard poultry to see how, you know, kind of get a feel of who wanted it and who didn't. And, I think to their great dismay, I think it came back for backyard poultry. It was actually a 52.7% win for backyard poultry on that survey. But when that happened, the most amazing thing happened. Suddenly, the survey became unscientific, which, granted, it is. I mean, this wasn't a scientific survey, but it became unscientific, and the results had been tainted. Councilman Jeff Schwenker actually said that cheating had occurred on the survey and that it was not a valid survey. You know, and the question has to be asked, Cynthia, you know, if it had been a no vote, a resounding no by 52%, you know, would the results have still been, you know, tainted? Would it still be such a big deal? And I don't think it would have. So what I really think happened was is that, you know, they thought that it was just going to go a flat out no. It came back a yes. Then they had to deal with the issue. And then Councilman Hinman told me when I was speaking with him exactly what happened. And he told me that the HOAs, basically the homeowners associations here in O'Fallon, started really, when they saw that change was about to occur in favor of backyard poultry, they came out of their their neck of the woods and started complaining to the mayor and to their council people, and and basically swayed them in 2 weeks from a 9-1 vote to a 7-2 no vote, which I thought, well, there's nothing I can do, you know, I'm you know, I've hit a dead end, you know, I might as well just cut my losses and go, you know, which. That's what I plan to do. But I was actually contacted on my page by a guy named Brent Stafford, which is a great guy. And, you know, when he contacted me, he said he could help me. And so he piqued my curiosity, and I got back with him. And he informed me about the petition part of the charter for the city of O'Fallon, which states that if I can gather 10% of the people that voted in the last mayoral election, I could actually have this issue put on the ballot in the next election, and that's basically what I'm trying to do. He came over, he helped me, write the ordinance as it stands now, and we changed it as much as we thought we should or could in certain cases, and then that's what I've been doing now. I'm trying to get out there and educate people on the subject matter of backyard poultry and get this petition signed so it can, have its day in democracy, to watch it being practiced and let the people decide.
One thing I like about your story, I think that the humorous irony is I'd like you to explain to our audience what the city ordinance contained versus what the ordinance looks like now.
Sure, absolutely. Originally the ordinance that they drafted, let it be known that I did not agree with it, but I thought, if I could get these jokers just to pass it and let me have chickens in my backyard, so I could feed my family from a clean food source, I'll be willing to put up with a little bit of, for lack of better words, into, just some of the asinine things that were in it. It was just absurd. But so this is what they said. They said that, number one, there was only a maximum of 4 hens per household, and it had to be a single-family resident, which means that anybody that lived in an apartment or a condo that had room somewhere to keep these animals could not keep these animals. They're being kept on the rooftops in New York. They're very versatile animals, but they would eliminate that, with what they were saying. Also just 4 hens per household. I mean, what if you have, 8 kids? I mean, I know that's rare these days, but it does happen, not just that, but these animals, this isn't a dog, this isn't a Rottweiler or a husky, we're talking about a chicken. He takes up a single square foot of space, and so, it was a little odd that they just 4 hens and that's it, we changed that, of course. Now we decided that what we wanted to do was go 4 hens per person per household, and what that did was, by changing it that way, would allow, of course, more birds per person, per house, but also when we say per residence, you know, in the ordinance, and that's the actual language per residence. The word residence then opens up everybody. You know, anybody in O'Fallon that cares to have it, that of course won't live in a HOA that has bylaws against it, would be able to have them. You know, they said no males of any kind. You know, and of course, to a certain extent, I agree with that. You know, yet again, it's one of those things you have to sacrifice. I think, and you know, if you have neighbors, the last thing you want to do is have a rooster crowing, you know, all night long. You know, and get, you know, and of course, people don't come and talk to you about it. They're going to call animal control, and it's going to be a big headache for everybody involved.
Well, Patrick, I need to interrupt you there because I had roosters, and they don't crow all night long. They crow if there's a predator nearby, and they crow if somebody is trying to kill them.
Well, and they also crow if, like...
As you well know, a crow, as you were just saying, a crow is a warning call, but it's also a to another rooster, it is a challenge. It is a, hey, I'm here, you're here. You know, that's what roosters do. I mean, that's what they've been doing since the dawn of time for roosters, is that they've been, you know, guarding the female of the species. They've been fighting each other, and they've, you know, they're protectors, making little chicks. So
usually they're crowing to let you know the sun is coming up.
Right. And but you know, there's also the misconception of the animal, you know, that they do crow all the time, and that, you know, they're mean spirited animals, and that they'll spur you and this, that, and the other. There's a lot of misconceptions about them. You know, and I'm sure you're well aware of this, Cynthia, but, you know, people are very weird sometimes. Their fears and preconceived notions on an issue can actually cause them to vote no on something that is quite common sense, you know, that is really no big deal. They will make much to do about nothing when fear is involved, when uneducation is involved on the subject matter. You know, and so with the males, it was one of those things to where we felt when we were rewriting the ordinance that we would keep in to a certain degree. I mean, I think that if you're planning to want to breed, yes, it's going to be a problem. You know, if you're, you know, if you have a problem with culling, you know, with taking the males out in any kind of, you know, if you're going to food source them, you know, that would also be a problem because, if you can't process the animal, then you're looking to have to get rid of him some other way.
So what else did the city ordinance have that the city drafted that was egregious?
Let's see, aside from the four birds was the permit fee. You know, they wanted you to pay a $50 initial permit fee for the privilege of keeping these animals, and then a $25 annual fee every year after that to renew the permit, which is just, you know, that's absurd. There's no sense for that at all. But I will admit that I was the cause of that. I thought that if I could, in some way, shape, or form, make them see this as a monetary gain for them, that they would be more apt to pass this bill. But I was wrong, and that had no effect on them either. I mean, the way I proposed it was if that they charged $50, you know, permit fee, and 500 people did it in the city, they would make a substantial amount of money, you know. And I gave them figures and this, that, and the other about other things. But yet again, that didn't work. And so now that is no longer part of the ordinance. We completely took that out. That is no longer an issue. Another thing that I didn't like about it was they stated in the ordinance that you had to build your coop out of brand new materials, that they had to be completely rust free and painted and, you know, just basically immaculate. And I've never known a chicken to get up and tell me that it didn't like something. I mean, I don't know. I've been around chickens, but I've never known one to stand up and go, hey, you know, there's a little rust on that nail over there, you know, and you know, that chicken wire over there is not straight. You know, I mean, it's nonsense. And especially since O'Fallon is talking about, oh, it's a green city and it's a green initiative and we're just, you know, green, green, green. You hear about it all the time. You know, they're getting this big solar plant or, you know, solar panels and blah, blah, blah. Well, now we can't use reclaimed lumber. You know, now we can't recycle materials to make a chicken coop out of? I mean, come on. I'm not advocating for them to be eyesores by any stretch of the imagination, but, you know, to put a limit and start dictating what I have to build something that's in my backyard that I'm going to look at every single day, but you're never even going to come by and see, is pretty, it's just absurd, I mean, it's just absurd for the city council to say that. So that was taken out, of course. Let's see, another thing that just kind of rubbed me the wrong way was them coming by at any time. There was a line in the original ordinance that basically gave them the right to come on your property to inspect this coop, should they ever get a call from a neighbor. If your neighbor next to you is not a fan of the idea of backyard poultry to begin with, and all of a sudden they one day decide just to call, code enforcement on you for some reason, the next thing you know, you got some stranger in your backyard snooping around your business. This is clearly, invasion of your privacy.
You mean they're allowed to search without a search warrant?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, if a neighbor called and complained about your coop, that gave them the right to come on your property, and that's just nonsense. When I read it, I was just like, okay, you jokers are, getting a little out of hand here, John Hammond, Councilman Hammond, I think he said it best. He actually said something that I found right on the spot with this at one point in time during a council meeting. But he said that, he says, how much bureaucracy can we wrap around an egg? And I think that's a very true statement. I don't think that probably a truer thing has been said on this issue by that city council than that, I've heard some pretty nonsensical things from these guys. So the question being asked, how much? Well, apparently a whole lot. If you read that ordinance that they were trying to pass. Well, funny enough, though, they wrote that thing how they wanted it, and they didn't pass it. So now we've taken all that out, and now you can have a substantially, larger quantity of fowl on your property. It's still limited. It is still limited. There is the point that, to a certain extent, that could harm certain people in certain ways, that it benefits some people, but will harm others, in certain ways. And I think that is accurate, but I think that overall the sacrifice on limitless numbers of poultry in your backyard had to be made to secure it. People who are on the fence about this idea will be a lot more apt to sign a signature for a petition to allow it to have its day on a ballot if there is a limit. I've actually had people ask me that as they're signing now. You're not just going to be able to have 32 chickens in your backyard. I'm like, no, there's a limit, and it's even in the language, the keeping of limited poultry hens, in the ordinance now. And people seem to feel more secure with that. I don't necessarily agree with it, but I thought it a necessary evil. But, that's pretty much it as far as the changes are concerned. Basically, I took anything that benefited the city, and me and Brent took it out.
Tell us about how the petition drive is going so far. Are you able to get a favorable response, and are we looking like we're going to get the right number?
Well, I mean, yes and no. As of right now, I guess the truth of it, or the reality of it, is I have 90 days to gather signatures. But that is if I want to get this on the ballot next year. If I want to have it on the ballot this coming April of 2015, and not April of 2016, I need to have this done by the first week of January. And, I'm optimistic. I did very well today. I mean, I was only out there for 2 hours today, and I got over 30 signatures, at a public library. So, I mean, that's pretty good traffic for a public library on a Friday evening in 2 hours. That's 15 people an hour. That's pretty good.
That's very good.
With just me standing out there, I don't think that's bad at all. So, You know, and I got to talking to folks. Obviously, you can tell I have the gift of gab, as my mom would say, and I like to talk. So it's, you know, I get to talking to folks out there, and people stop and listen. And you know, it really is about education, but people are more apt to sign when you make them aware of certain things. You know, I have to actually tell them there's not going to be any roosters, and you can see the blood pressure actually drop. You know, yet again, it's not that I agree with it, but it's the human condition. You know, people have preconceived notions. So, yes, I am optimistic that we will get the signatures that we need by the first week of January. I had a person actually contact me on, you know, OFAL and Residents for Urban Poultry, the Facebook page that I've started. And she came out to the library. She picked up some, you know, petitions, and she's going to help, you know, in her own way. And I told her, well, next week, if you know, do what you can and you know, get them filled out. And if you can't, don't worry about it. You know, bring them back to me next weekend. And I have somebody else coming out Sunday to pick up some more. So, you know, people are getting involved. And you know, I think enough people are actually getting involved to, you know, the city council is going to have to take notice. You know, either way, you know, they can't ignore the fact that there are people who want this.
That's the spirit of our community, is pulling together and determining our own destiny. So are you hearing people who are concerned about noise and vermin, as you say, you said the city council was worried about what if chickens attract vermin? Tell us your take on that.
Sure. Well, Councilman Jim Pepper, who's leading the charge on the vermin call. You know, he is the Teddy Roosevelt of vermin. He's just got a very strong belief in that. And I've reassured him at council meetings and at other times that a chicken will actually eat a mouse. You know, it will eat a mole. It doesn't have much qualms about that. The larger vermin that he's talking about coming in, though, you know, raccoons and possums and skunks and coyotes and all that, they're here already. You know, how I feel about it. I have a raccoon and a possum that come to my backyard on a regular basis. And you know, Cynthia, the funniest thing is that I actually took the time and I called Animal Control here in O'Fallon, and I asked when I made the phone call, I asked, I told them that I had these animals in my backyard. I had a raccoon and a possum, and I asked them, you know, number one, how dangerous were these animals? And number two, how big of a problem were these animals in O'Fallon? And the answer I got shocked me. I was told that, of course, these animals can be very dangerous. They can carry disease and pathogens, rabies. You know, don't let your kids or your dogs get near them, that kind of thing, which I knew. You know, I'm an old country boy. I knew this. But, you know, the second thing that I was told, though, is the shocker. I was told by this person that it's a huge problem in O'Fallon already. That it's such a large problem in O'Fallon, having these problem animals, as they're calling them, these vermin, is that they are so flooded with calls about this in O'Fallon, they can no longer go out and catch these animals or release them at a different location. They don't have the funds to do it. You know, they get numerous calls per week. And I was told by this person that if I wanted these animals caught and relocated, that I had to call a private pest control operator to come and remove these animals. But they also didn't recommend that, because they said, quote unquote, from this person, that O'Fallon is these animals' natural habitat. That O'Fallon was built and has expanded into these animals' territory, that we are living in their natural habitat now, and that by removing them and relocating them somewhere else, it could have an adverse effect on O'Fallon's ecology. You know, that's exactly what I was told. And I was like, you have got to be kidding me. So I got, you know, Jim Pepper, you know, touting that backyard poultry is going to bring vermin into O'Fallon. And then I have an animal control operator telling me that they're here in abundance already, and we're actually in their habitat. You know, so it almost turns it around to the irony of who's the vermin.
Yeah,
you know,
that's
you know,
funny.
You almost want to ask that to Mr. Pepper, but yeah, that, you know, it's just kind of it's nonsense. Yet again, it's one of those things to where, you know, common sense would kind of dictate to you that at one point in time, New York City was sold for the island was sold for $25. You know, it used to be country as well, and in fact, there are still coyotes that run the streets of New York City. You know, there are animals there. Now, if there's those type of animals there, they don't think that they can have them in a, you know, small town like O'Fallon is just nonsense. You know, it is, you know, what Jim Pepper is doing is feeding fear to people. He's unduly causing a panic within a population because his personal feelings and bias towards these animals are being, you know, coming to the surface. I talked to Mr. Pepper on the phone at one point in time. He told me that his grandparents had chickens, and he remembers going out to their farm, and they stunk, and there were rats in the barn, and this, that, and the other. Well, you know, I rebutted him, and I told him, I said, well, Mr. Pepper, of course there were. I said, number one, I said, you were 5 years old, so a rat that was actually about 6 inches long was probably 2 feet long to your six-year-old mind. You know, and had red glowing eyes and, you know, was going to carry you off in the dark. And, you know, and secondly, I said, the truth of it is that your grandfather probably had 40, 50 chickens and maybe cleaned out their coop once every 6 months. I said, of course they're going to stink. You know, the truth of it is that any animal that isn't properly cared for and whose food stores are left open to natural, you know, elements are going to draw vermin. And they're going to stink, you know. And you know, of course, when I told him this, he was just like, "Well, you could be right," you know. And Jim Pepper was the same guy that's coming up behind me and grabbing me by the shoulders at a city council meeting, you know, saying, "Oh, this is moving along for you, isn't it, boy? Oh, good job, all right," you know, and cheering me on, and then he votes no for it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Patrick, tell us how you can keep chickens where they don't stink. Tell me what you learned from your involvement with Joel Salatin and how that is a different way of doing agriculture.
Absolutely. Well, yet again, you know, growing up the way I grew up and being around it, there's just a better way. And Joel Salatin, yeah, I think New York Times referred to him as the high priest of the pasture. You know, this guy, you know, he's got it down to a science. And basically, you're using nature's template. You know, it's already here. God designed this planet in a very awesome way. And he placed us as stewards of this beautiful creation, you know. I dare say Eden, you know. And so as stewards of this creation, if we follow that natural template he's already laid down, things just flow, you know. And by this I mean, you know, for instance, you know, with natural movement of these birds, if you move them, they like to move around. They don't like being stuck in one place all the time. So if you're moving these animals in some sort of mobile coop or mobile pasture pen device, you know, you will never smell, there just won't be an accumulation of their waste. You know, as you're moving it, you're constantly fertilizing as you're going along. You know, you move them daily, you know, so every day not only are you fertilizing a new piece of grass or pasture, depending on where you have these animals, but you're also providing these wonderful animals with fresh grass to eat and fresh bugs. I mean, every time you move them to a new plot, it's like opening the buffet for these guys, you know. And of course with that, you know, you get into, you know, supplementing their feed. You know, if you're feeding them a fresh patch of grass every day, because chickens eat grass, you know. If you feed them a fresh patch of grass every day, and you're feeding them, of course they're getting bugs and worms and all kinds of good stuff, grasshoppers from that patch. The amount of food that you're having to purchase to feed them reduces greatly, you know. And of course, you know, that even has far-reaching consequences that most people don't think of. Because if you're not buying corn feed, you know, well, think of it like this. Less corn is being shipped to where it's being bagged, to where it's being milled, to where once it's cracked and put in a bag, if chicken feed, then it's put on a truck and shipped to a feed store, and then you have to drive to pick it up. I mean, it has far-reaching effects. And so, you know, supplementing them that way, and then, of course, your table scraps, I mean, most people aren't aware of this, but chickens, you know, they're just like us. You know, they eat meat. I dare say a chicken will eat just about anything, you know. You know, if you're supplementing them with your table scraps every day as well, you know, it just has a remarkable effect on these animals. They are happier. They are cleaner. And, you know, the products that they produce taste better, you know. So, that's what it really comes down to is you know, healthy, happy animals always are tastier. You know? Yeah. I kind of put it that way.
Have you been to Joel Salatin's farm out there in Virginia?
Yeah, I went and visited Polyface, and you know, I walked around the place, and that place is just amazing. You know, I mean, this man, Joel Salatin, you know, his place at Polyface, I think it's 500 acres. But 100 of it is pasture. Now the rest of it's woodland, you know. And on that, you know, he has cattle, pigs, you know, he has hen, you know, egg layers, and then he has broilers, you know, or meat chickens, you know, chickens for their beef or for their meat. And you know, he moves the he moves them in such a way that it really mimics, you know, yet again, it mimics nature's template, God's template. You know, he has the cattle go through and mow the grass down. Chickens don't like walking in tall grass. It's not easy for them. They have a hard time with it. So, you know, optimally, if you can get the grass about 3 inches high, the chickens have an easier time going through it. Well, the cows will mow it down to just about that. And he moves his cows out of the paddock, you know, and once the cows are gone, he'll bring in egg layers, you know, and he'll put the egg layers on that land. And, of course, the egg layers, they come out of their mobile coop, and he actually calls it the Eggmobile. And they scratch around, and they scratch in the, if you've never seen a chicken let into a cow pie, let me tell you. It is a sight to behold. He will sling manure 6 feet in a circular diameter. It is an impressive thing to watch a chicken fertilize a pasture. And of course, he's looking for fly larvae, and he's getting protein. And that protein's been shifted down to the eggs that he's laying. And this is mimicking, like, the wildebeest on the savannah. You know, as they come through and mow the grass down, well, here come the egrets behind them that are sifting through their manure, and supplementing their diet, and of course, you know, doing their thing. So it's just an amazing thing to watch what Joel Salatin has done, and what he keeps accomplishing. You know, the man is an innovator, and you know, and then the thing is, you know, people say, well, that's out in the country, and that's a large piece of property, 100 acres. You know, well, the same thing can be done on a quarter acre. You know, there is no difference. You know, I would actually prefer, if I could, on my little quarter-acre plot here, you know, in my backyard, I would have a 10 by 12 by 2 foot tall pen. I would put 75 broiler hens in it, which is completely fine, you know, for those animals. That is enough space. They are completely fine and healthy. And I would move it across my backyard daily. You know, a broiler can grow from, which a broiler is the type of chicken a broiler is called a Cornish cross, and it's actually a hybrid chicken that's been developed by us here in America for a food source, and it has a double breast, and it's very palatable to us, and we've grown quite accustomed to eating the Cornish cross. In fact, if we were to try to eat a heritage chicken, like a Rhode Island Red or something like that, we wouldn't really care for it because the breast is not as plump or as what most people consider normal today, the double-breasted Cornish cross. But anyway.
And their legs are very long. You look at the heritage variety and you're like, whoa, that doesn't look like a normal chicken leg. But most people don't realize that a chicken leg that you buy from the grocery store cannot even support the weight of a chicken.
Absolutely. And that's, you know, in factory farming, when they're, you know, you know, they put them in, you know, CAFOs are confined animal feeding operations is what CAFO stands for. And a CAFO for a chicken is those long chicken houses that most people have seen out in the country. This is also where those preconceived notions come from. So they drive past these long chicken houses that have about 10 to 20,000 birds in them. You know, these animals live in that condition, in that box, for 8 weeks. And they can't, they go from hatchling to processing in 8 weeks, which is astounding for any food source to be grown that fast. But the problem is that since they are in such large numbers inside those CAFOs, those chicken houses, is that they're walking around in their own manure. By doing that, fecal particles are getting, you know, in the air. They're breathing this in. It's actually causing lesions on the lungs. Because they're growing so fast and they're being fed, that's another thing you have to understand, they're being fed a high corn diet constantly. They are not eating grass at all. You know, they're not eating natural forage. They're not eating bugs. They're not doing any of that. So they're eating this high, you know, protein, high starch, corn fed, you know, and bone meal and crap like that, that's just not good for a constant food source in the first place. And they're growing at an exponential rate to where, yeah, their internal organs can't handle it, their legs can't handle it, they can walk a few steps, they collapse, they can't breathe because of the lesions on their lungs. Their mortality rate is extremely high. This is pretty gross, and this is what they sell to you at the store. You know, but a Cornish cross that is brought up on pasture can still be brought to about a 4-pound processing weight in 8 weeks. The difference is that it's going to taste like actual chicken. It's actually going to be more healthy for you here. And not just from a nutritional point of view, but also it definitely has been proven more healthy for you from a cleaner food source point of view, which is huge to me. Joel Saladin actually took one of his pastured poultry birds, and he processed it. When he processes outside. He doesn't process inside a building. You know, he has an open air concrete slab. It's got a roof over it. He's got running water sources, but he processes outside. You know, and what's better to kill bacteria than UV? You know, the sunlight is the biggest killer of bacteria that we have. You know, so why not do it in the open air? Well, he does. Well, he took one of his birds that was processed outside, and then he took a store bought chicken from a company, I'm not going to mention its name. But it's a well-known company. And he took it to, I think, the University of Virginia, if I'm not mistaken, and had it tested, and it came back. His was 130 CFU. CFU, in case people don't know, CFU is colony-forming units. And we're talking about bacteria here. So there was 330 CFU with his chicken, okay? Then they tested the other bird from the well-known company that most of us have eaten in our past, anyway. And it tested at over 3,000 CFU. I mean, it's a colony of bacteria. It's the grossest thing ever, you know. And how the USDA can come at us and tell us that this is okay for anybody's consumption is beyond me.
Well, probably we would want to encourage our listeners, that's why you should rinse your chicken off before you put it in the oven.
Oh, well, you know, the truth of it is that, you know, I recommend if people are listening to, you know, find a local farmer. You know, I promise you, if you start shopping locally and eating seasonally, your food will taste better and it will be healthier and cleaner for you. I mean, I guarantee that. You know, I don't eat chicken right now. I'm out of chicken. When I buy my chicken, I actually buy from a local farm in Marthasville, and he processes his chicken on site at his farm. And you know, I buy what I can. I put in my freezer, but when I run out, I don't eat chicken in the winter. You know, I just don't. And I wait until he starts, because he doesn't grow them in the winter. You know, he doesn't put pasture because, you know, how cruel would that be? I wouldn't want to be out on a pasture in the dead of winter, even for 8 weeks, you know. So those chickens aren't going to do very well anyway. So, as far as clean food goes, you know, the processing inside of a slaughterhouse, you know, Joel Saladin said it best when he said, if we put glass walls on every processing center in the United States, people would stop eating, you know. And that is true. You know, there's too much wrong with the food system the way it is, and that's why I've opted out to start doing it myself Not just because I grew up with it. I mean, I truly don't see anything wrong with this because I grew up with it. But the other side of it is that I really, you know, I just cannot know what I know about our food system and any longer and sit idly by and allow them to say that certain things are okay for my children and my family to eat.
Well,
you know, not in good conscience.
Tell us about how processing was addressed in the original O'Fallon ordinance versus how it is in your ordinance.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. No, I completely forgot about that. I'm glad you brought that up. No, originally, in the original ordinance, there was you could not process outside. It was the most ridiculous thing in the world. You could not process outside. And, you know, of course, you could process in your bathroom. You could process in your kitchen. You know, they didn't have a problem with that. But you could not process outside. You know, they cited concerns about your neighbors seeing it and being offended. The strange thing about that is, you know, there's more than one strange thing. But a strange thing that struck me about this is there's absolutely no rules on O'Fallon's law books whatsoever about processing a deer in your backyard. So, you know, if you live in the smack dab middle of, O'Fallon, and you go out in fall and shoot yourself a buck, you can bring him home and have a hen right there in your front yard if you wanted to. And they wouldn't say anything. You know, there's no law against it. But if you wanted to process a chicken in your backyard, well, that's completely nonsense. You need to go inside. You know, somebody might be offended. So we took that completely out. We were like, that's kind of cuckoo. But we did put in place that if you were outside, that it had to be shielded, you know. You know, by that, there's some pretty ingenious ways that you can go around shielding it. Most people have privacy fences in their backyard, so, you know, already that's a shield. You know, that could be considered a shield. You know, also, there's other things. You could put up a small tarp, you know, something like that that's going to stop from, you know, people seeing it, but it is allowed in your backyard. I mean, you can go in your backyard and process and this, that, and the other. But yeah, it was just kind of odd that they wanted you to go inside your house and do it, or yet again, you know, take your bird somewhere else and have somebody else process it. One of the reasons that's weird is because if you pass an ordinance allowing chickens, I believe, it is my belief, that then your poultry would fall under the federal exemption law, which allows the processing of up to 1,000 birds in the state of Missouri without having to get a license. You know, that was my take on the confusion on, you know, one of the things they said. I was like, well, that just doesn't make any sense. So which is it? You know, I mean, there was a lot of... you know, it just wasn't clear to begin with, you know, when it came to certain aspects of it. But I think that the way it is now, or the way I'm proposing it, is of course, you can process in your backyard. You know, there shouldn't be a problem with it in the first place. You know, I mean, this is a chicken has been domesticated for the better part of 8,000 years. You know, we've been processing them and eating them for quite some time, so much so that a chicken would be hard-pressed to survive on its own in the wild for very long. You know, they like being around human beings. We like being around them. And, you know, they follow us around. We can train them. It's kind of weird for me in the first place that they are just having such a hard time with any of this. It's just kind of mind-blowing that something so natural. And something I, like I said, I believe that God gave us these creatures to tend and take care of, you know. So it's really off-putting that they are fighting this so much.
Crazy. We do have another expert in the studio with us to give us her thoughts on the chicken ordinance from the lens of an agronomist, as well as a citizen of a municipality where the elected officials are not educated on chickens. So here's Catherine to tell us some of the saga of O'Fallon. Welcome, Catherine.
Good to be with you tonight.
I would like you to take a moment to respond to what you heard him say from your perspective. If you understand more about chickens, that you can enlighten us. Can you just tell us what happened in your experience and what you think of what's happening in O'Fallon?
So I grew up in O'Fallon, and I grew up not having a lot of direct contact with chickens. And when I was about 17, I was at the library, St. Charles County Library, one day, and I was looking at books on horses and other animals, and I found a book on keeping chickens in the city. And so at that time, I was kind of surprised. I didn't realize that you could keep chickens in the city, but I knew I was interested in farming and being involved in agriculture in the future, and I had read Joel Salatin's book called You Can Farm, which has all kinds of great ideas on just, you know, a lot of people grow up in the city and they think farming would be nice, but they don't know how to start. Well, Joel Salatin's book, You Can Farm, is all about just start where you are, okay? Do you have an apartment? Can you keep a couple houseplants, a couple tomatoes and a pot out on the patio? I mean, you can start with what you have. If you have a backyard, you could put a garden in, just different ways of looking at what you have and doing what you can where you are, no matter what size your lot is. And so keeping chickens just kind of grew out of that. Again, I was about 17 when I first got my first box of chickens, and I was kind of surprised. I didn't even realize that they shipped them through the mail, but you can order a box of baby chicks, and they ship 25 little chicks to the post office, and you get a call at 6 in the morning and get to run up there and pick those chicks up and bring them back home into a nice warm environment. So it was a great learning experience on raising chickens, and led to me to where I am today. So
what do you think about the importance of municipalities allowing their residents to have chickens in their backyards?
Oh, I think it's very important that residents have the right to be involved to the extent that they would like to be involved, as long as they still continue to maintain community standards. And the people who want to keep backyard chickens are also going to have an interest in providing good PR to their neighbors. So people wanting to keep chickens are not going to want to overcrowd their backyard full of chickens. They're not going to want their neighbors to be upset with the chickens. So they're naturally not going to want to keep roosters, and they don't want to have odors, and they don't want to have any of those negative connotations. I think most people who keep chickens in the backyard are doing it more so as a hobby, and they are going to go far and above animal welfare standards to ensure that their chickens are very happy and are getting the best care they possibly can.
So what do you think about the city having a maximum number of chickens of no more than 4 per household?
Well, personally, I think that sounds... The thing with keeping chickens is it really depends... There's so many variables that can come into play, because there's a big difference if you have like an eighth of an acre lot, if you have a half acre lot, if you have a 3 acre lot. There's huge differences that exist within that, and I think a lot of the number of chickens is going to depend on a big part on the size of your lot more so than the number of people in your household. Personally, I ended up keeping about 20 chickens at a time. Again, when I ordered the chickens, the hatchery I purchased them from sold them, you got 25 chicks, and you had a couple different packages you could choose from, and you could order all females, but even within the all females selection, you're still going to have the occasional, they only guarantee the sex up to a 99 point a particular percentage of the time. So anyway, when you order a box of chicks, if you order 25 chickens, oftentimes you'll have about half to a third be roosters. And if those end up becoming called out, and should anything, there are natural predators in the city. There's hawks, foxes, coyotes, and other items creatures out there that may find your chickens tasty. And so you oftentimes start with 25 chickens and end up with 10 or 15. By the time your hens are of laying age, from different factors. So I just think it's a little bit difficult to enforce that, but I understand where the city is coming from in setting that limit.
Well, if you were going to stand before the city council right now, tonight, and give them advice, what would you tell them?
I would tell them they need to work with their citizens. For one thing, to start with, the number of citizens of O'Fallon that do not live in a subdivision is quite small. So most subdivisions already have ordinances or governing contracts that homeowners sign when they move into that subdivision that go beyond the city ordinances. So the percentage of people in O'Fallon who, one, want to keep chickens and have the desire to go out of their way to spend the time and effort and money to raise their chickens, and two, the people who have the ability to have chickens because they have a large enough backyard or don't live in a subdivision, is actually a very small number. And I think for the city to work with those residents would be a very important part in this going through.
And public relations, what about even them trying to be accommodating unless there's a good reason not to? Dogs make more noise than chickens.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, dogs make way more noise.
And dogs make bigger doo-doos than chickens.
One other aspect on the crowing issue with roosters, there is quite, I mean, again, it comes down to the education of the people, and many people are afraid of chickens simply because they've not been around them a great deal. But we had a small blue Polish rooster. The Polish ones are the ones with the poofy feathers on their head, named Pookie. And Pookie was small. I don't know. He was like a little bird. Anyway, there's a great variation in the loudness of the crowing, whether it's a large Buff Orpington rooster or whether it's a very small, cute, or like a bantam type rooster as well. So I understand the no rooster, and that is a common thing that many other cities have adopted as well. However, even within that, some people enjoy the sound of the roosters crowing, and I think actually if your neighbors within a mile of your house are okay with your chickens, I don't see why that would be a problem, but those are my thoughts.
Okay, well, you've lived in O'Fallon for 28 years. If O'Fallon passes this ordinance to allow people to have chickens, do you think it will be enough to bring you home from Kansas?
Oh, that's a good question. going home is just not the same without having chickens in my backyard.
I get it.
not been the same since they moved out. I'll be in Kansas at least until I finish my degree here, hopefully fall of 2016, and then we'll see where I go from there.
Well, I don't say this to all of my guests, but let me tell you that you are precious, and I'm so excited to hear you talk about the opportunity you have to express your passion. I love hearing you talk about what is important to you, because there are a lot of people you're speaking for. There are so many people who would love the joy of having a chicken. They just have never had one. And I myself am one of those. I never would have thought I liked having chickens until you showed me that they're really cool. So thank you for being on our show.
A few weeks ago, I was in Hutchinson, Kansas, and I visited a farm there, and I was there to do soil sampling, actually. But when I pulled in the driveway, I noticed that the farmer had a small little flock of probably about 25 barred rock hens in his front yard with an electrified fencing around them. And I was just like, oh, I want to hold one of your chickens. So, just nothing like having a chicken, you know, so just nothing like it. So definitely looking forward to that once I finish school and live somewhere that's not an apartment.
Neat. Well, thank you for
being on
our show today. You have a good evening, and hopefully we'll get to talk to you again sometime.
All right. Sounds great.
Thank you, Catherine.
Bye.
Well, I've thoroughly enjoyed visiting with you.
The big thing is I just want everybody to know, I guess the biggest thing is that, these animals are nothing to be afraid of. You know, they are, they will help you appreciate things a lot more. I mean, when you care for them and provide for them, and they provide back to you, there is a connection with your food source that we are rapidly losing in this country. You know, we've become a 24-hour a day food culture. You know, McDonald's is now open 24 hours a day. It's always food, food, food. And in a culture where that is happening, and now 60% of this country is obese, you know, we should start paying more attention to how we're eating, what we're eating, and where it's coming from, and get that appreciation back. Because I think that when we really start to look at, at producing our own food stores, knowing where our food comes from, and getting that appreciation back, the health of this country will actually start regenerating itself.
That is a great idea, and that's a great note to end on. I cannot thank you enough, Patrick, for coming on our show today.
Really appreciate it.
Well, we're going to look forward to doing an update with you, because there are so many levels of this story. It has to do with our Constitution. It has to do with the way we run our families. It has to do with our property rights. You have been a blessing. So thank you, Patrick, and hopefully we get to talk to you again real soon.
Oh, I hope so. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
This has been another edition of Homefront. I'm Cynthia Davis, and I thank you for joining us. We're taking America back one family at a time. I sincerely hope you heard something that left you feeling inspired, motivated, and ready to engage our culture. If you enjoyed our show, you can find more at cynthiadavis.net. You can also find me on Facebook at Homefront with Cynthia Davis. Have a great week, and make sure you come back next time for another edition of Homefront.